You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The commercial aviation industry has high hopes for biofuels as a replacement for hydrocarbon-based fuel. As profits are increasingly threatened by rising fuel prices and consumer awareness of the role of aviation in global warming, biofuels are being billed as the path to both profitability and sustainability. Unfortunately, emerging evidence suggests that as airlines rush to procure biofuels, they do so at the expense of people and the environment. Lucas Ross is a research fellow at the Oakland Institute, an independent policy think tank. He's author of the recently published report, Eco Skies, The Global Rush for Aviation Biofuel. And he joins us now from New York State to discuss his findings. Hello, Lucas.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks. Now, just remind us again, what exactly are biofuels?
So biofuels are simply fuels made from renewable biomass. If you've got a fossil fuel, say coal or crude oil, it's basically taking something out of the earth, turning it into an energy and combusting it and releasing carbon that's been sequestered in the earth for thousands of years. The idea behind biofuels is that you can make them out of organic materials that absorb carbon naturally during their life cycles, and when you make them into fuel and combust them, there's no net gain in CO2, and therefore there's no net gain in carbon in the atmosphere. That's the way it's supposed to work. What we know, in fact, is that there are a lot of problems around the sustainability of biofuels, and we're finding out more every day when it comes to the fact that they often disrupt food prices by creating competition with food crops. And in many cases, they're even dirtier than fossil fuels when you consider the indirect effects on the land, either in opening new soils for the production of crops, or in the use of GHG-emitting pesticides and fertilizers to grow them.
I want to get back to that aspect of the issue in a moment. But first of all, I wanted to ask you about the airlines' motivation to pursue biofuels. Can you tell me a little bit about what you know about that?
Yeah, I would want to point out two things based on the research I've done and the industry people that I've talked to. The first thing is price volatility. Over the last 10 years, the airline industry's fuel bill has more than quadrupled. This has led a lot of smaller players to be driven out of business, and it's forced a lot of bigger players to consolidate. They have a real problem budgeting in fuel volatility into their business model. Right now, it's about 40% of their expenses as a whole. So they're really in love with the idea of a fuel that wouldn't be as prone to these geopolitical price shocks as fossil fuel is. But the second thing that I want to flag up is that this is all happening at a time when the aviation industry is growing, but also people are more aware of climate change than ever. Now, even though the industry constantly says that it is only responsible for somewhere between 2-3% of CO2 emissions, aviation, if you count all the other things that it emits, soot, aerosols, contrails, water vapor, it's contributing 4.9% to climate change as a whole. So that's fairly significant. So they see biofuels as a way of not only down the line finding a fuel source that is less prone to price spikes, but also a way of keeping people from letting their green consciences keep them from flying. Unfortunately, they seem to be, you know, going about this rush for biofuels by embracing fuels that are either economically unviable, environmentally unsafe, or both.
Is it possible for there to be biofuels that are not those things, that are environmentally, green?
You know, since biofuels started to be used almost 2 years ago in the summer of 2011 when they were approved, the majority of airlines that have run flights have run them with a fuel made from used cooking oil. That's yellow grease, the stuff you usually see in fast food restaurants. Now, this has a lot of really good PR implications. It has a certain, it gives people what a lot of business community people want the green economy to be, which is this thing that just goes from mutually enabling active consumption to mutually enabling active consumption. The fries you're eating on the runway are going to take you on vacation. But, I mean, that is not really something that, even if we aren't with yellow grease talking about as many of the, you know, dangerous environmental practices as a lot of other biofuels are referred to, land clearances, land grabs, food price disturbances. It's not really a viable approach to our energy needs. If you took every drop of yellow grease in the U.S. and converted it into fuel, you would keep our planes in the air for less than 3 days. So most of the airlines that are doing this now are doing it in a way that is really just a PR sleight of hand. They know that there isn't enough yellow grease to make a meaningful dent in our energy needs. And even the U.S. government's U.S. Energy Information Agency has said as much, that there's just not enough of this stuff to make a difference. The worrying thing is that the aviation industry has very ambitious plans for its use of aviation biofuels. It's promised to cut its airline, its CO2 emissions to half of their 2005 levels by 2050. And in order to do that, they're going to need about 13.6 million barrels of biofuel a day. By 2050, that's the majority of the biofuel that is expected to exist on the planet. So talking about whether or not this can be sustainable, I mean, this is a tremendous expansion of biofuel production that we're talking about here.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more specifically about that, because that's where we started and that's where I want to come back to. You talked about land clearance. You talked about food price disturbances. Can you pick those apart a little bit?
Sure. I think the most important plant to talk about when we come to those issues is Jatropha. And I always feel obliged to talk a little bit about Jatropha, because before I started doing this work, I frankly had no idea what it was. It's a poisonous shrub that produces oil seeds that can be ground down and used as a feedstock for biofuel. When it was first marketed in 2007, the mid-2000s about, they were saying that it would be this, you know, magical crop that could grow on marginal land so that it wouldn't threaten food prices, that it would encourage rural development, that it would be high-yielding and basically answer a lot of our energy needs. And it's important I'm bringing this up now, because the biggest player in aviation biofuel production is also the world's largest private Jatropha developer. I mean, the reality, though, is that this is a feedstock that has a very dubious reputation. Since the initial enthusiasm about it in the mid-2000s, it's been revealed that you can't really grow it on marginal land if you're expecting it to produce oil. So that kind of removes any sense that it's, you know, immune to these food versus fuel concerns that, you know, usually affect a lot of biofuels. There's a growing amount of it, I would add. We've gone from just about a million hectares in 2008 to we're looking at about 13 million hectares by 2015. Now, the worrying thing is, in addition to that, though, is that a lot of Jatropha projects that we've looked into in Ghana, in Mexico, in Zambia, have carbon debts when you consider direct and indirect land use effects of over 600 years. That means that it's going to take 600 years of producing fuel off of the land that's been opened to break even with the amount of carbon that's been released getting these things off the ground anyway. So that is, I think, like the most, like talking about increasing production and looking at the way the biggest players all think that Jatropha is this wonderful investment is very worrying, not just for CO2 emissions, but also for potential disruptions in our food supply.
And so when you talk about food prices, I guess then what happens is if the land is being broken and used for Jatropha, then it can be used to grow food.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's important to point out that when we had the global food crisis in 2008, between 20% and 40% of the price spikes were down to biofuels. They can be traced to that.
Which are the regions that are most affected?
In terms of land grabbing, we have seen in the last 10 years about 37 million hectares of land grabbed that is bought or leased for biofuel production. Most of that, the majority of it is in Africa, but that 37 million number includes Latin America and Asia as well. It's something that I would add has really been aggravated since the financial crisis of 2007-2008. A lot of institutional investors are really, understandably, skittish about the stock market right now and investing in that kind of thing. So they're looking at land, and particularly agriculture, as a really safe way to, you know, stash some of their money without it losing a lot of value. So that is something that, like, biofuels in particular, as the leading cause of land grabbing in the developing world, are doing right now. They're part of that turn away from more conventional forms of investment and back towards land.
How much awareness do you think there is about the downsides of biofuels? Because, I mean, you've produced this report, but do you get a sense that there is a growing understanding of the dangers of biofuels?
You know, it's hard for me to tell, but I feel like a lot of people in the U.S. started to rethink our relationship with the federal subsidies regime we have for producing renewable fuel in the U.S., the Renewable Fuel Standard, that's RFS, over last summer during the drought when we were trying to figure out, you know, why was part of the reason why food was getting so much more expensive wasn't the drought itself so much as it was 40% of our corn going towards ethanol. So I feel like a lot of people are going to be rethinking their relationship to biofuels and looking at it not necessarily as a, you know, a kind of silver bullet to our energy needs that a lot of people thought it was going to be, and are going to think about it, you know, more in terms of our needing to reduce our emissions wholesale and not looking so much for techno fixes in order to get us there.
Well, I think an important part of getting that word out there is this report. Thanks so much for producing it, and thanks for talking to us this morning.
Wonderful to be here.
I've been speaking with Lucas Ross. He is author of the report, Eco Skies, The Global Rush for Aviation Biofuel. To read the full report, you can visit oaklandinstitute.org.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.